Hello, everybody, and welcome back to not only another day here at the Damage Report, but a big old Friday day, a day where we've all got chores. Well, a chore. We have one chore. We're going to fill up this garbage can. And I have got one of my favorite pieces of garbage making a return today. I've also got Brett Ehrlich. Brett, how's it going? Thank you for being here.
Am I in the garbage category?
There was sort of a link there, but not intentional. No, we're just glad to have you.
Keep my name out of this garbage sentence, you know, and I'll be happy. I'm good, man. I'm mellow today. I was really excited earlier, but then I realized it was just because of all the coffee. And I was like, okay, so it's not like emotionally I'm anywhere significant. But I will say, if you guys want to see some awesome programming today, sit tight. Because we have this show, which is gonna be bonkers, followed by Indisputable, also bonkers. David Schuster is on, and then Shelley Winter is in the bullpen. Shelley is Dr. Richie's friends that he yells at, and they yell at each other. It's just delightful. Wait,
I need to see this because I have a hard time even imagining him yelling.
No, Shelly does the yelling, and Rashad like relishes the fact that he is like officially gotten under Shelly's skin. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's laugh yelling. It's like there's a. It reminds me of my. You know,
it's like
you
us. Hear.
Yeah, it's like that. So it's great. They disagree, but they're still friends. Like it's really awesome. But they're gonna talk about very, very like real issues. So that's gonna be great. Then after that, it's Galaxy Brain with Ben Carollo. So you'll see that on twitch.tv/TYT. And then after that, we got an amazing show for you today. Ben Glebe is the comedian who did Idiot Test. He's been on the show before, ran for president. He's going to be on the show. He went down to that anti-vax restaurant in Huntington Beach and had like hidden videos. So we're going to see that and cover a bunch of stuff. John and Jack are doing that with you. And then after that, Nina Turner is in studio with Cenk Uygur to talk about some really interesting, awesome, and at times horrible, demoralizing stories, but also important ones. And then she's going to stick around for the bonus episode for members because they're going to talk about a little bit about her campaign and running for Congress and what went down there. Then after that, at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, we got Common Room for you. It's game night. So you'll be in the Common Room with us playing some Jackbox games. And John's already crafting an excuse not to do it. So we'll share that with you.
I was literally waiting for you to stop talking so that I could ask, is it a full panel already? Because I wanted to give you even more before I inevitably take it away. We'll see.
Let me help you, John, because it is the kind of show where you can just show up and disappear. Like you can jump in the Discord if you want with us and we'll have your audio on. If you want to do a video call, we can do that too. But if you want to just play, you can play as well. Let us know, but you'll be using Discord. Members get priority. People who are subs get priority and higher tier subs get more priority just to kind of give back to you, which you give to us, and you can play games with us.
And you said it's going to be Jackbox games.
Jackbox games.
Awesome, cool. So have you tried out because I know you've done Among Us. Have you done the Fortnite Among Us?
Oh, is that what it is now?
Apparently, well, it's a new
thing.
That's
crazy, because I said to Brooke or Jordan like that, We're gonna start doing like some. There's gonna be some cool announcements about the Friday Common Room / Game Night thing coming up pretty soon. And one of the things I wanted to do is like a version of Among Us in Fortnite. It's crazy that they just came out with that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's awesome. Okay, well, we'll talk more about that. But there is a lot of news coming up. So thank you everybody for being here, regardless of what platform you're on. If you could hit the like button, share the stream, that would be great. So the people know that we're live. And if you want to send us comments, tweets, super chats, questions, all that, we'll respond. Actually, if you have even deeper questions that you want longer answers to, I have a great way for you to get those questions answered. That is by submitting them for our live member Q&A, which is going to be taking place next Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time. That is for our tier 3 members on YouTube on the Damage Report. We have a post on the community tab where you can post questions. We also do a lot of live talk, but it's great to have some things to talk about in advance. So that happens every month, and the next one is coming up on Monday. Now that said, Brett, I think it's time to launch into what is an overstuffed rundown for today's show. Let's do that.
Indeed.
Just about as our show yesterday was taking place, DC was dealing with the threat of somewhat unspecified bomb. We knew an individual was being approached by law enforcement. That situation has now been resolved, and we want to give you all of the details that you need to know about that, especially considering that as of this morning, I went looking for updates and coverage and all that. And there's seemingly nothing. So another bar has been passed in the US. You can have a bomb threat in the Capitol and it's news for like a day. And then that's it. Well, anyway, here's what happened. Floyd Ray Roseberry allegedly parked his truck near the Library of Congress and shared his extremist views in a rambling anti-government diatribe, which he beamed to thousands of viewers on Facebook and which has since been removed from the site. In the live stream, Mr. Roseberry said he aimed to start a revolution and spoke ominously of other patriots who had joined the cause. Now understand that while his stream has been taken down, videos from it are everywhere. I'm not gonna play any. I go back and forth on this sometimes, not interested in getting his stuff out directly, but I do want you to understand the sort of political ideology and some of the other related things that might have inspired this attempted or at least alleged act of domestic terrorism. US Capitol Police reported that a bomb was not recovered from the truck, but possible bomb making materials were collected after his arrest. We're awaiting more specific information about that. In his live stream, Roseberry indicated several times that there were four other explosives sitting around this town, but that he didn't know where they were because we all came in different ways. He claimed his toolbox was full of ammonium nitrate, which has been used previously by generally white supremacist domestic terrorists here in the United States. If there is any truth to the other bombs or the other individuals, I have seen nothing about those people being found or any threats being made. We'll see if there's some update there. We're gonna give you more information about his background and all of that. But Brett, what are your thoughts about this?
Watching the videos, you can see that this, like, it's just so strange because there's a couple things. First, you look at, like, it's some dude saying that the South has come to DC. Mm-hmm. And you hear that kind of talk and you're like, this is some kind of racist thing. But then you just realize that he has read every conflicting but thematically linked Facebook post/claim that you can fathom. And it has convinced him generically that something terrible is happening and Joe Biden is somehow responsible for it.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he doesn't seem like he's drugged up or anything. He's just wildly deluded on either drugged up on copium, but watching him try to put together these like very grave sounding deep threats, but it's just like, if you shoot me, this thing's gonna blow up. I want to see my wife on Sunday.
Yeah,
and it's like, buddy.
Yeah,
you're not gonna go home on Sunday, even if you survive this. You can't do this. Like, who? And it is playing out on every possible front right now. This, the way that people go to social media for disinformation and then act on it in ways that are just nonsensical, but also like deadly.
Yeah.
To kill people, to kill himself, and then to, especially with like vaccination and mask mandates and everything, it's we're in a really tough, really bad spot.
I agree. There's massive disconnects. The internal consistency isn't there. There seems to be some thread of Joe Biden can do X or give me Y that isn't stated that causes the bomb not to go off, but it isn't a part of his rants. So who knows? And who knows if it was even capable of exploding? I mean, that isn't clear at this point. But you mentioned the copium and all that, so we're gonna get to a bit more of the politics of this. Old videos on his Facebook page show he participated in at least one rally to overturn Joe Biden's 2020 election victory, the Million MAGA March, which did not include a million people. That was back on November 14th. And understand, there had been, like, after January 6th, there were these warnings put out that people who are still mad about the results of the election could individually or in groups commit future acts of violence. And there haven't been a ton. But in April, a man, if you recall, rammed a vehicle into a barricade outside the northern entrance of the Capitol, which killed a US Capitol police officer and injured another. Now we have this individual, supposedly four others, although I'm guessing those are fictitious at this point based off of what else we know. But we also know about this individual that Roseberry's wife said her husband left North Carolina last night on a purported fishing trip. She said her husband, who she said voted for Trump, had been upset with the result of the 2020 election. She also said that he was struggling with mental health issues and recently changed medication. And there are references in his videos to not being able to get medication or losing health insurance and things like that. So look, as is generally the case, there is a mix of sort of strictly partisan stuff with some ties to vague conspiracy theories, but also potential issues with mental health. So yeah, it's the sort of mix, unfortunately, we're growing accustomed to. And thankfully, at least in this case, nobody lost their life.
Yeah. It's just so difficult. Like, you want solutions to your problem. First of all, you're gonna have to tell me what is your threshold for evidence, period, in the world, buddy. Like, what is it gonna take to convince you that Joe Biden won this election? Tell me, can you tell me? No one can tell us because they just want to be right about it. So already we're not in a discussion. And that's very frustrating. And then the other thing is, like, I have a solution to your problem of losing health coverage, and it's single payer, it's Medicare for all. And unfortunately, there are people outside of you who have convinced you that there is something socialist and terrible about that, even though it's working better in other countries. And you like socialism, you like the police, you like the fire department. But I don't understand what is between you guys and just coming to terms with there's a policy that works in other countries where they pay half as much per person and live longer, and you can get your medication when you need your medication without having to be employed during a pandemic as your political movement struggles to, quote, reopen stuff in ways that end up making it more difficult to go back to normal in the long run. And that's another theme, is this instant gratification, which is hilarious coming from a religious right whose entire life is supposed to be predicated on delayed gratification. They wanna know, they wanna go back to work, they wanna do this now, as opposed to just putting on a mask, doing your staying away from people until we can get this under control, instead of something that they also fetishize, which is just some massive problem, these deaths that are out there, or at worst, they resort back to this myth ideology, which is baked into religion, that, like, oh, this is all just a myth. The real myth is my God myth.
Yeah. Well, look, I agree. Let's move on to another angle on this. The details that have come out so far about the DC attempted bomber are fairly clear, and I wish that we had a country, or at the very least a media, where everyone was united in saying political violence is a bad thing, and it's not patriotic, it's not something you should aspire to, and not have all of these grifters, some on TV, some just on the internet, inspiring people to think that drastic times call for drastic measures. But unfortunately, in a variety of different forms, that's not the media that we have, and there's either ambiguity, attempts to sanitize these radical movements or apologize for them. And even in the wake of this possible alleged attempted bombing, we do see that. So we gave you information that was very clear and readily available about the potential political motivations of this. So the right, are they going to get that message? Is this a moment where they can potentially learn that there are some who are going too far? We need to step back from the brink. Well, unfortunately, possibly not if they're watching Fox News, because this is how they talked about it.
Man claiming to have a bomb in his truck near the US Capitol surrendered after an hours-long standoff. Law enforcement did not find a bomb in the vehicle, but say they collected possible bomb-making materials. So far, no word on a possible motive. I'm Jackie Ibanez, now back to the Ingram angle.
So that's just not true. there were many words, lots of them, in order, sentences actually, paragraphs of sentences about possible, there were his words about possible motives. But again, a movement does not have to step back from the violence that's becoming a more and more accepted thing if every time one of them crosses that line and acts on it, the right pretends that it doesn't happen. So this guy, he's not on the right. The Capitol insurrectionists, they're not white supremacists, they're not radicals, they're probably not even Trump supporters. They spent months doing that PR for them. And now we have it immediately spooling up for this individual too. And so this is what Fox News, the most legitimate of the media on the right, does. It shields the right from an understanding of how far some of its members are willing to go. And that unfortunately almost certainly gets us closer to more doing it.
At a time when they are basically focused utterly and nonstop on a potential threat from Afghanistan refugees that aren't here. Mm-hmm. That's what's so wildly frustrating. It's like, guys, the terrorist threat is the one you're creating on a daily basis. And Charles F. Coleman's on the show all the time, and he says, don't profit off of controversy. That's all that's baked into it. And you see Tucker fanning the flames every single night. People on Fox fanning the flames every single night, conveniently saying, I'm just asking questions. Looking at, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that people at Fox go down the same exact rabbit holes as their audience does. And all they do in their pitch meetings is decide how are they gonna, which parts of those theories and nonsense are they going to call out explicitly? And which ones are they just going to dog whistle at?
Yeah.
Or echo, repeat explicitly. And which ones are they going to dog whistle at? And that's it. And that's what you see playing out right there. They know they can't say it. For as much as they project onto other news outlets this, oh, you're protecting your own personal hidden interests, it is very clear that that guy went there saying, Joe, in denying the outcome of the election, obviously getting into this weird, this weird false choice between freedom and vaccination and masks.
Yeah.
Like, it's psychotic. And they're doing it every day.
And clear.
And if they were to just say this guy is obviously caught up in all of that, and you can even muddy the waters a little bit by saying that the guy's wife says that he has mental issues as a result of not being on the same medication, mm-hmm. like, you've covered your bases and you've been honest. But in this situation, they're saying there's no stated motive. He was out there for hours talking about his motive, saying exactly what he wanted and what, why he's there.
Yeah, they're not satisfied with covering their bases. They cover the stadium. You can't see anything of anything that's happening. And by the way, he is a white attempted domestic terrorist. So this is all playing out the way we would expect. They took him alive. He's got, a multi-billion dollar media network doing PR for him to protect him from any analysis of what happened. The mental health possibility, the issue, the potential that he has mental health problems, which by the way, is obviously a part of virtually every single person who is willing to commit any act of violence in a civilized society, becomes a huge part of the story, more so than, like, how clear does a white domestic terrorist need to make their agenda for people to accept it? Like, when it's a black, political violence, because those virtually never happen, but a black person gets killed, they dig into their past to try to find any sin they've ever committed to be an explanation for it. This guy's like, it's not even a written manifesto. You don't even have to read it. He's shouting it at you live to thousands of people, and they pretend that it doesn't exist. No, really fast. I understand. We got to break it a sec, but this ties into it. You have the media, the most mainstream of right-wing media defending him. You have literal elected Republicans apologizing for him. So here is what was put out by Mo Brooks, a guy who participated in the rally with Trump on January 6th, said, I'm aware of the Capitol bomb threat. I'm monitoring the situation. I am in Alabama. My Washington staff is accounted for and safe. I pray for the safety of Capitol Police and first responders on the scene in Washington. Sadly, violence and threats of violence targeting America's political institutions are far too common. Right there, if it ended there, That's a great statement to put out when a bomber's in DC. Unfortunately, that's less than half the statement. He said, although this terrorist motivation is not yet publicly known, and generally speaking, I understand citizenry anger directed at dictatorial socialism and its threat to liberty, freedom, and the very fabric of American society. The sentence ends there. I don't know what the generally speaking was for. The way to stop socialism's march is for patriotic Americans to fight back in the 2022 and 2024 elections. I strongly encourage patriotic Americans to do exactly that, more so than ever before. Bluntly stated, America's future is at risk. The only takeaway from that is, look, I get it, man. I get what this terrorist is thinking. They are dictators and they are gonna take away your liberty. The future of America is at risk. But like, let's do the election thing instead. Like, imagine if Ilhan Omar put a statement like that about a Muslim terrorist who had some sort of political objective. How defensive and apologetic is this elected representative of what that guy was doing? He was threatening to blow up the Library of Congress, potentially killing dozens, hundreds of pages, people who work there, other elected representatives, civilians walking by. And Mo Brooks' first thought is, I get it. I get the thing that drove you to pack your truck full of ammonium nitrate and drive to DC.
This is baked into, I mean, you have a lot of interesting, you know, analogs and, you know, flip sides of the same coin. And then you get to see if they actually are the same coin. So like Lauren Boebert said, the only people who are building back better are the Taliban.
Yeah.
If Ilhan Omar had said anything like that, done.
Yep.
Well, you look at the, you know,
if she retweeted that same tweet, she would get censured.
Yeah, and also at the same, the second half of this whole thing is a wink at the people who think that this guy's a hero. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. Is like, there's plenty of people who say, like, look at you know, Palestine. They're like, listen, when someone takes a suicide bomb into a crowded marketplace, no matter what side they're on, and you know, if they're, you know, in Gaza or wherever, in Israel, I denounce that. But I don't think we should lock up children and families, right? Because that's what my mind went. Is like, there's tons of stuff where people on the left say, I think I understand the plight of these people that you are vilifying, and who there's been deaths committed by people theoretically on that side. But the difference is, you're talking about families on one end, and then you're talking about like unhinged terrorists.
Yeah.
And then you're motivating more stuff like that. How do I know, Mo Brooks? You wore body armor to the January 6th rally because you knew there are folks like that out there. And you're still indicating that you want to support them. And that's why I read the second half of his entire stupid statement as a giant wink.
It is.
Go ahead.
100% is.
Wink. And I need that. And most nefarious of it all. And it's the stuff we get mad at everybody for. Why are you keeping these problems around? An election. Why are you keeping money in politics? An election. Why aren't you following through on your campaign promises, Democrats? An election. Why are you fomenting terrorism with giant, long, twice as long as a normal tweet, so you had to take a screenshot of it? Things like this? An election. Wink. That's what's so frustrating to me.
Agreed. We're gonna take our first break. When we come back, we're gonna see a little bit of what's going on in Afghanistan. So we got that for you in just a few. Okay, so if you weren't there for the social break, two little things I want to make sure that you know. One is that we've got a great Jordan-based emote, which is probably coming soon. So that's awesome. And two is we want to give a shout out to an individual who's been a big part of TDR for some time now. Our intern Josh is unfortunately going to be hitting that old dusty trail for a bit after helping out with the production of stories and the editing of videos and the longing of the show. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in advance of the show and behind the scenes during the show. And Josh as an intern has been a big part of that. So apparently we'll be coming back at some point. We'll miss him until then, but Josh, thank you for all that you've done. And I know if you're watching the show, you may not have known that Josh was working here, or all the other people who do, but the show wouldn't exist. It certainly wouldn't be any good without them. So thank you. Okay, with that, why don't we jump back into this thing? Oh, geez. Earlier this week, we received assurances from the Taliban that while they still would be ruling based on the dictates of Sharia law, Women did not have anything to fear. They would be protected in some way, or the Taliban has changed in some form. It was vague, and perhaps with good reason, because so far the early indications are that not much has changed. It took just a few days for instance, them to ban women anchors from state television. So we found out that as of just a couple of days ago, the Taliban has indefinitely suspended women employees, including Khadija Amin, a prominent anchor woman on state television. Tweets going out from inside of there saying that she has been banned, other women banned from returning to work. This is one of the fears that were expressed in the early days after the fall of the regime. You can see the replacement there of Khadija Amin with a member of the Taliban taking over her seat. She put out a statement, by the way, saying, "I am a journalist and I am not allowed to work. What will I do next? The next generation will have nothing. Everything we have achieved for 20 years will be gone. The Taliban is the Taliban. They have not changed." And so, Brett, I don't think that we've talked about this over the past week, but I'm not very surprised. What do you think?
This idea of like a brand new Taliban is hilarious. I mean, it's not hilarious, but just like it is ridiculous. It's like Vincent D'Onofrio's character in Men in Black, where he's like, "I'm Edgar," but inside he's like a giant bug and he's trying to convince people that he's just a person. But every so often he's like, just reaches out and eats someone alive. Like that is what the Taliban's trying to pull off right now. And they could do it if they don't do stuff like this. Like the idea that a group that took over an entire country in 11 days, that the only imagery we have of it is brutal executions and motorcades of guys with AK-47s that they've now replaced with AR-15s because they have all our weapons now. The idea that they're like, "Hey, we're just friendly, we're just a friendly group of guys here." Like, it's crazy. And this is proof of it. And these are the little bits of information that we gather based on what they put forward. And with any like any regime at all, but it's pretty explicitly pronounced in regimes kind of like this, like they will pick and choose what they show the world. Mm-hmm. What they give access to. Like when you think about Cuba, you think about North Korea, you think of everybody who comes back and is like, "It was pretty great here."
Yeah.
You've got some pretty explicit, like, something very loud sound just happened outside. But when you think of this, when you think about those regimes, you think about like very curated tours that they give people.
Sure.
Of what is allowed to reach the outside world. And this, the face that they're putting toward the outside world, as opposed to North Korea, where it's someone just like sitting in front of a news desk being like, "Everything's fine, everything's fine." In this situation, it's like, "We are replacing the news desk with this guy here."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Not surprised. We'll see. Maybe, I mean, it has been more than 20 years. Maybe there will be some small change, but so far, they're not even waiting, like giving it a little buffer so that the media stops paying as much attention. They're jumping right back into it, into, you know, like we've got some notes here based on what it was like in Afghanistan from 1996 to 2001. Under the Taliban then, women had to cover themselves and leave the house only in the company of a male family member. The Taliban also prevented girls from going to school and women from working outside the home. They were also prevented from voting. Nobody's surprised by that. So assuming they go back to that, they will be now, thanks to 20 years passing, slightly more repressive than Saudi Arabia, which our country is perfectly fine with. So I can imagine the amount of pressure to get better that they'll face with the Taliban. But yeah, people are putting in the chat, like, why are they so afraid of women? I don't know. Afghanistan will be obviously objectively weaker because of every single one of these moves, which are, let's just remember again, in terms of casting stones, obviously stronger, more codified versions of the same sorts of fears of female progress that most of the world still has, that we certainly have here. I mean, the most watched faces in cable news were demonizing female soldiers earlier this year, or trans female athletes and things like that. Obviously, this is worse, but the idea that men feel that their position is inherently at risk of women taking it away, that's basically a constant across our species.
And just like
really fast last point,
how demoralizing it must be for people who used to turn on the news and see the news, and now they look outside their window and in the street they know that it's terrible, but like then it creeps in through the television, which hey, for many people can be an escape, and there is no escape. It's actually just more oppressive and more invasive because it comes from a place where you were expecting to get away from it for a second.
Yes. Okay, we'll do our second break. And when we come back, refugees, the effort to demonize the possibility of bringing in more Afghani refugees, that continues in the mainstream media. So we'll be going to that after this. Okay, with that, let's jump back into things.
You may have noticed we have problems here. We have a housing crisis, by the way, a big one. Do you have kids? Ask them. According to the Wall Street Journal, the amount of available entry-level housing in the United States, and that's defined as homes up to 1,400 square feet, is at a five-decade low. So when the supply shrinks, the cost rises. The median value of a home in California just rose above $800,000, first time in history. Less than 40% of the millennial generation will own a home by the age of 34. They're all renting, and rent is going up too, a lot. The growth in median rent outpaced the growth in median renter income in nearly every state between 2001 and 2019. That's a disaster. That's a terrible development for American citizens. So why is it happening? Well, lots of reasons, but one reason it's happening is America's becoming a lot more crowded than it ever was. And one of the reasons for that is that we're now living through the biggest influx of refugees in American history. We are on pace for at least 2 million illegal immigrants arriving in America this year alone. That's far more than the number of asylum applicants who arrived in Europe in 2015. That was over 1 million, just over 1 million.
Okay, so we're going to talk about this right now, but I want you to remember the video you just saw, because I think this is one of the purest examples of everything that is truckers' shtick. It is, hey, I'm a populist. I'm going to acknowledge the actual issues that are facing you, the core economic issues. And then I'm going to link it to some xenophobic BS that not only has nothing to do with the problem, like if you were to list the top 100 things contributing to our housing crisis, Afghan refugees would not be on that list. So it's not only not connected, but factually, he could not be more wrong than he actually is. We're going to break down how, but I know that Brett is stewing. So Brett, what do you think about this right-wing populism?
I got confused on which Tucker stuff we were focusing on today. I did not see that before this. I did not expect it, because I was expecting the thing that he's like, no, I have a whole hour of a show and I can take 4 minutes out of it to say things that will give me a plausible out in the future when I'm accused of wanton xenophobia and white replacement theory. But no, we waste not a moment here on Tucker Carlson. We take everything from one side, the populist issue, and we tie it to the same damn thing, xenophobia and racism. Do we want to list all the contributing factors to this? The reason we're getting more crowded is because people are moving to cities. When people are moving to cities, because there is no economic opportunity in the places that you purport to defend the most. But rather than defend them with actual policy initiatives and ways they can constructively try to go influence Congress, and if you're so interested in a party realignment, which that is exactly why Tucker is barking all this populist stuff, he knows that there aren't enough Republicans to vote for his tax breaks for him personally, Swanson broth pleated pant Carlson. He now knows that he needs to give them something to get mad at. And he needs to peel away people. So he goes and has Jimmy Dore on. And he's like, say whatever the hell you want. Say Medicare for all. I'm not going to say anything explicit about that. But I am now going to point everyone that is now watching my show at refugees. It's their fault. It's their problem. Or censorship. Yes, let's get mad at them. It's their problem. Because that platform is where they all stew in to get all their information and all their motivation to hate the other. Yeah. He's created this gross petri dish of putrescence and hate. And these are all the organic materials that he needs to put into it on a daily basis so the fungus can grow stronger.
That I can't fact check the biology there, I'm not sure, but I think that you're 100% right about your analysis of his strategy. Yeah, there will be some brief reference to ruling elites or the housing crisis or whatever. He'll briefly mention it, and then he will point you to refugees or black academics or trans athletes or women soldiers or whatever. I don't even understand why they use the term populism, as if it has anything to do with populism as a concept. It is an incredibly transparent, shallow invocation of real problems, no interest whatsoever in dealing with them, and using that, weaponizing the concern against outgroups. That's all it is. That's all it is whatsoever. But anyway, I also want to show how he's wrong. People are saying we're going to miss the D block if we fact check the whole thing, but we're going to go quickly through this. The country, first of all, is not overcrowded. It's a massive country. We can fit a lot of people, but to the extent that it is crowded in any places, it's more of what Brett is saying. And it's certainly not because of refugees. Let's take a look at refugee resettlement ceilings from 1980 to this year. Shockingly, back in the 80s, we actually used to take in far more refugees than now. I have no idea if that was a reasonable number when it was at a 250,000 or close to 200,000. Maybe we could have taken 5 times as much, I don't know. But we take far less, and it has been trending down over time, both the actual official ceilings and how many are actually coming in. You can see that as of this year, the ceiling went up quite a bit, although still lower than was generally the trend over the past few decades. But something like less than 5,000 refugees have actually been brought in. And yes, it is a pandemic, but we're gonna see over the next few years, even if Democrats remain in charge, if we will actually see a big raise to those numbers. And so refugees are not crowding the country. Even the reference he made there to 2 million people, he is being 100% willfully dishonest there. There are something like 2 million encounters between Border Patrol and migrants, and virtually all of those are immediately deported or eventually deported, which he knows. They're not immediately handed a house in Ohio. That's not how any of that works. And so we go farther, but it's just nonsense. And it is just designed to get people who are angry about their economic position, instead of looking for some sort of solution. Does he advocate for aid to renters? A clearing of their rent so that they don't lose everything? You'll notice he does not do that. Instead, it's just hate the brown people, hate the people from Afghanistan. That's all he gives them.
He wants them, yeah, he doesn't want to pay for anything. He doesn't want to spend anything. He doesn't want to do any actual change of anything. He wants to give people something to be angry at that's free for him. That's it. It's free for him to do all this stuff. The other stuff costs resources and time and planning and everything, but he just wants to be like critical race theory. That's it. That's a boogeyman. That doesn't exist. What he's complaining about with critical race theory doesn't exist. And with and all the other issues aren't big issues, but they can become issues. It's the difference between manufacturing consent and what Fox does, which is manufacturing dissent. And that is exactly where we've headed with all of news and all of social media in this day and age. It's either like, it's crazy. It's uppers and downers nonstop. It is the thing that makes you most angry, and the thing that makes you feel so ecstatic that you can't parallel it. So that's why you seek out more of it. It's like really happy news and really horrible news. And they are manufacturing dissent. They come up with fake things for you to be mad at. Critical race theory is not taught in any of these schools. They want to redefine critical race theory as anything that reminds you that the presidents who found the people who founded this country owned slaves.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah. And look, you could help with rent. You could propose some sort of legislation to massively increase the amount of affordable housing that gets built, subsidized or directly built by the government. You could do You could do so much. The infrastructure bill, you know, green infrastructure to produce jobs in areas that people are moving out of, to thereby increase the effective housing supply. I mean, look, I'm not a policy expert in this area. I'm just a regular guy with a YouTube show. This isn't that complicated to come up with at least something. He knows this stuff. He doesn't care. As Brett said, he doesn't want to pay the money. He's not interested in the actual solutions. They are a means to an end. Anyway.
But, yeah. And really, there's people in the chat saying, like, ban corporate ownership of single family homes. You can, because that's another thing. Like, there's giant investment groups that are buying up homes and renting them out. They're it's like somewhere between like hostile takeover and just Airbnb-ing America.
Anyway, we're gonna go into our last story, the first hour, in just a second, but really fast. Zombul sent in a super chat saying something seems off today. Is Brett not wearing socks? I just thought that was funny.
It's true.
You diagnosed it. Stoneflower Dragon says, love you, Brett. Tell it. Nice. Steven Belgard says, we need a trashy emoji. Don't we have a trashy emoji on YouTube? I think there is a trashy emoji. Yeah, there's 100%. Maybe refresh, no, but it's
John,
there.
This is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to just say, all right, I put one on there. Try now.
It's there now. I just uploaded it. Anyway, I don't think we have 10 minutes. I think we have less than 10 minutes. But anyway, we are gonna get to this last story. Don't worry. I'm just gonna read one or two more comments. Jeremiah Maudlin sent in a big super chat. Thank you, Jeremiah, saying, John, please answer Brett's question. What does he have to do to get you? And I am going to assume you mean on game night. I would
what
really
do I have
to
do to become the person when I ask you something, you're like, that is my plan. What do I gotta do to become that level of like, oh, that's a plan. That is what's the word?
I support many
important
of your plans.
To me. Okay. I'm just a guy.
We'll see.
Standing in front of a guy. Sitting in front of a guy. I got no socks on.
Sitting in front of a camera in front of a guy.
Sitting in front of a camera in front of a guy with a tiny, comically tiny ring light about this big in front of a guy asking him to play Fortnite with me.
I will see about that. But Marissa's gonna I'm not gonna be able to play Fortnite if Marissa kills me because we don't get to one more story, which
there
we will.
There it begins. Those are John Iderola excuses, everybody. It's Marissa's fault. Marissa, do you have any problem with John playing Fortnite tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, she doesn't. No. All right. Permission granted.
Oh, wait. Okay, I figured it out. This is why we're not syndicated on radio. I knew I'd figured it out. Anyway, let's go into the last story. What do you not want to discuss this? Are you trying to block this?
No.
Anyway, here's the D block for you. So let's jump into it. Yesterday, it was announced, at least seemingly, that OnlyFans, you know, a large and growing online platform, effectively an alternative for Patreon, that is focused not exclusively. There's a lot of types of content, but on a variety of different forms of sex work, videos, pictures, all that, is going to be getting rid of that component of its work, at least significantly. Now, we're gonna debate whether this is actually happening. There's a lot of conflicting information out there. But that said, here is something that OnlyFans put out in a statement yesterday saying effective the 1st of October, 2021, OnlyFans will prohibit the posting of any content containing sexually explicit conduct in order to ensure the long-term sustainability of the platform and to continue to host an inclusive community of creators and fans. We must evolve our content guidelines. Now they did say that they would still allow certain posts containing nudity as long as they adhere to its acceptable use policy. Now, its terms of service currently outline a number of things that are prohibited from its platform, including material involving people under age 18 and other illegal or harmful content. They say they'll be sharing more details in the coming days, but you might have seen also going around responses from like their social media implying that this statement that was put out was not true. So there's a lot of questions. Brett, what do you think about this? Do you think they're actually doing it?
Okay, so there's a lot to this. First of all, the company itself has said, we have not said what this means. And everybody is running to the hills saying—
Seems clear though.
What do they say? No sexually explicit content.
That seems pretty clear.
No, it isn't.
Isn't it?
We're still gonna allow nudity, but no sexually explicit content. Now where are you at?
Confused.
Tell me what that means.
I'm confused.
So it's not a clear statement. If it was a clear statement, you would walk away with it only saying, I know exactly what that means.
I'm not saying that the entirety of it isn't clear. I'm saying the concerns that many people have, you know, people who make their living on there by doing sexually explicit material, it seems pretty clear that that will be banned. They say that that will be banned.
So at that point, where what conversation are we left to have? We can't have a conversation about the like specific kinds of things that won't be allowed on there, right?
Because we don't know yet, but we speculate.
So where does the line stop? That's something we don't know the answer to yet. So is there someone who's saying, well, actually, this is artful short film? We don't know. And that's why OnlyFans came out and said, like, we are going to guide our creators through this process. So that's in terms of the specifics and what it affects. We can now, we're in a speculating area. And in that speculation, there's plenty to talk about. There's plenty to talk about, which it is very likely that there are people who used to make their money by doing sex acts in person. Now they are selling video of their sex acts on OnlyFans, which was a boon in a time of COVID where you couldn't physically interact with anybody because it was even more dangerous than it already was. All those things are in jeopardy. And that uncertainty now is putting us in a position where we don't know what they're going to do. And all we do know is that it's once again in a place where this taboo subject of sex work, which is incidentally as old as time, and there's irony and hypocrisy in there, is once again, the people who make the laws are still engaging in that activity. And we see those all the time. What are we doing where we're putting it away? Now, there's a middle ground where you keep it away from children. Fine, that's going to be in there. Why OnlyFans? And the answer is the reason that OnlyFans is now changing their policy is because of money. The people who own it are looking for more investors. And this is another very old dynamic in the online sex industry. PayPal is not going to take that sex money. They're not. So there's companies like CC Bill that exist out there that are just to do the transactions for adult sites because the above board and legitimate companies won't do that. And that has to do with transactions financially. And it also, another category of that is the applications, or the apps. So on your phone, you can make an app whenever you want, however you want. But if you want people to be able to download it on Android, you got to go through their shop. If you want to do it on Apple, you got to do it through their shop. And they don't want, because of their reputation, this dirty, dirty money in there. Now, they'll allow that dirty, dirty money to get them to a point where they're now in a position to have certain appealing things about their company that now they're going to forget how they got there and go legit, leaving all these people who got them their success by funding it through the transactions, and they made 20% of all that take. Now the pimp's going legit and kicking everybody to the curb.
Yeah, including the more than 300 OnlyFans creators reportedly earning at least $1 million annually, 16,000 making at least $50,000 a year in very difficult times. And even aside from the pandemic and its effect on this sort of work, obviously having a platform like OnlyFans has some undeniable inherent benefits in terms of safety, privacy, and all of that as well. Yeah, you're right. I wish we had more time to go into this, but yes, MasterCard and Visa cut ties with Pornhub. Recently, it's speculated that that's part of this as well. I guess feel like some fairly obvious other ways to solve the variety of problems that are a part of this come to mind that wouldn't necessarily not only cast aside all these people that made them what they are, but leave them with a platform that might be more legit. But what's going to be like you? What's the benefit over Patreon at this point? Anyway, we're going to have obviously more discussion of this coming up. For right now, if you want to know about the effect this is going to have on a lot of the individual creators, there's some great threads on Twitter about that, people talking about it and about what they're going to do to try to adapt to this and not be ruined as a result of it. But anyway, more to come. For now, though, we are out of time. So thank you for watching. If you're on Twitch, YouTube, there's more coming up. Short break. We'll be back after this. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.